Hey, this is Dave DeCamp from antiwar.com. This is anti-war news for Friday, March 8th, 2024. All right, the first story at the top of antiwar.com today, Biden announces a U.S. military mission to establish a port in Gaza. So I just watched the State of the Union, basically recording this right after watching. And there wasn't too much foreign policy. He started on Ukraine. He said a bunch of nonsense about that. The biggest thing was his claim that Putin's not going to stop in Ukraine. He's going to keep going into Europe, which is just total nonsense. And he said, you know, pass the aid. And so earlier in the day on Thursday, it came out that Biden was going to announce this U.S. military mission to establish a temporary pier in Gaza to get more aid into the Strip. And this is as Palestinians are starving to death and Israel is still restricting aid. And this measure is being ordered instead of Biden using the enormous leverage that he has over Israel to pressure them to allow in more aid or just halt this genocidal campaign altogether. But he's not doing that. They're going to do this pier project, and they also started these airdrops of aid, which is really, you know, just a PR ploy to make it look like the U.S. is doing something while they're the ones providing the bombs and all the support to the military that's starving these people to death. So Biden said at the State of the Union, quote, "Tonight, I'm directing the U.S. military to lead an emergency mission to establish a temporary pier in the Mediterranean on the Gaza coast that can receive large ships carrying food, water, medicine, and temporary shelters," end quote. U.S. officials told Axios earlier in the day that the pier in the sea off the Gaza coast will allow hundreds of aid trucks to enter the Strip per day, but the pier will take weeks to build. It's not clear how long exactly, but at least a few weeks, and Palestinians are already starving to death at a rapid rate. Biden insisted that there would be no U.S. boots on the ground in Gaza as a result of this operation, but of course, the plan does run the risk of U.S. personnel being targeted off the coast of Gaza, which of course, if that happens, I mean, who knows what would happen next, the escalation that would be next after that. So the aid will pass through Cyprus before heading to the pier and will be subject to Israeli inspections, which means some could be turned away. So CNN reported the other day that just examples of items that Israel is turning away, is rejecting from allowing into the Gaza Strip. And that includes anesthetics and anesthesia machines, oxygen cylinders, ventilators, and water filtration systems. The report said that other items that have faced restrictions include dates, sleeping bags, medicines to treat cancer, water purification tablets, and maternity kits. So these are the types of things that Israel is restricting. So if Israel has the ability to turn these shipments away, I mean, what's going to stop them? So Biden, in his speech, he also acknowledged that thousands and thousands of innocent Palestinians have been killed. But he gave no indication that he was reconsidering his policy of unconditional military support for this slaughter. He said, quote, "More than 30,000 Palestinians have been killed, most of whom are not Hamas. Thousands and thousands are innocent women and children. Girls and boys also orphaned. Nearly 2 million more Palestinians under bombardment or displaced. Homes destroyed, neighborhoods in rubble, cities in ruin, families without food, water, medicine," end quote. So he said all that, but again, he's no indication he's going to change. And I mean, there's just something really sick about that, for him to stand up there and acknowledge the horror that he is inflicting on Gaza with Netanyahu and Israel. And I just mentioned in this story that the Washington Post revealed on Wednesday that the U.S. has approved over 100 arms deals for Israel since October 7th. So tons and tons of U.S. military support and political cover for this slaughter that's happening. And now another drastic measure instead of just cutting the Israelis off, making them agree to a ceasefire and to allow more aid and forcing them to do it. The U.S. certainly has the leverage for that. All right, so the next one here, Netanyahu vows to invade Rafah and rejects international pressure. So this article says that on Thursday, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu vowed Israel would continue its slaughter of Palestinians in Gaza despite international pressure, and said Israeli forces would invade the southern city of Rafah, which is packed with 1.5 million Palestinians. Netanyahu said, this was at a speech at a graduation ceremony for IDF officers, he said, quote, "Today I want to tell you clearly the IDF will continue to operate against all of Hamas's battalions throughout the strip, and this includes Rafah, Hamas's last stronghold. Whoever tells us not to operate in Rafah is telling us to lose the war, and that will not happen," end quote. A full-scale Israeli attack on Rafah would incur massive civilian casualties, and this was acknowledged in a leaked U.S. diplomatic cable that was written by U.S. aid officials that was obtained by The Intercept. This cable said, quote, "A potential escalation of military operations within southern Gaza's Rafah government could result in catastrophic humanitarian consequences, including mass civilian casualties, extensive population displacement, and the collapse of the existing humanitarian response," end quote. Rafah is the city that borders Egypt. It's where the most of the aid is coming in, is through that border crossing. So while the U.S. is aware of the catastrophe that will happen if Israel moves on Rafah, the Biden administration, they're not threatening any kind of consequences if Israel invades a city, at least for now. Again, I keep thinking something's got to give here, but still no signs that it is. And Benny Gantz, the Israeli war cabinet minister who was recently in the U.S., he was the one that previously threatened Israel would invade Rafah by Ramadan if Hamas does not release hostages. And Ramadan begins on March 10th. That's this Sunday. And there's no sign of a breakthrough in the Egyptian and Qatari mediated talks. Hamas is still looking for, I've saw some Hamas officials say that they're still looking for the permanent ceasefire. It's tough to really know what exactly the details are, what they're hung up on. I know Israel boycotted talks during this week, so no sign there. So does that mean they're going to invade Rafah on Sunday? I don't know. We'll see. And international pressure is growing on Israel as Palestinians are starving to death, and Israel is still restricting aid shipments, and the U.S. is still providing political cover. They vetoed that resolution at the U.N. that would have condemned the flower massacre. They blocked that from moving forward. So Netanyahu responded to the pressure, and he said, quote, "Indeed, there is international pressure, and it is increasing, but it is precisely when the international pressure increases that we must close ranks among ourselves. We must stand together against the attempts to stop the war," end quote. Of course, he wants to keep this thing going. All right, so the next one here, South Africa urges the ICJ for emergency order as Gaza famine looms. So this is one from Kyle, and South Africa is petitioning the International Court of Justice again to issue emergency orders to halt the Israeli military operations in Gaza that are causing a famine in the Strip. The ICJ has issued a preliminary ruling that Israel is plausibly conducting a genocide in Gaza. So the South African legal team said, quote, "Palestinian children are starving to death as a direct result of the deliberate acts and omissions of Israel in violation of the Genocide Convention and of the court's order. The situation then perilous is now so terrifying as to be unspeakable," end quote. So they're looking for the court to order something, to order a stop to this, which they haven't done yet. And, you know, they say that Israel in their order, in their ruling on the, that said it was plausible Israel was committing genocide. They said Israel can't commit these acts, which are acts that Israel is committing. So you can say that they ordered them to stop in that way, but they haven't put out anything that said Israel must just stop, you know, with just stop their military operations altogether. All right. So the next one here, Israeli airstrikes pound southern Lebanon, killing one. This article is from Jason Ditz. So Israel reported carrying out multiple airstrikes in southern Lebanon, attacks that followed overnight strikes and a nearby observation post in southern Lebanon. So they have continued to launch these strikes, pretty heavy airstrikes. And in all cases, Israel claimed that the targets were buildings or targets being used by Hezbollah. Lebanese military sources noted that in the attacks on Aita Run, which is one of these towns that they targeted, a house was hit in one strike, killing a Hezbollah member and wounding at least three civilians. Bulldozers and ambulances rushed to rescue those trapped within. In addition, 11 houses were reported destroyed in other towns. Hezbollah responded with rocket fire, which they said was retaliation. So again, this continues is heavy Israeli strikes in southern Lebanon, Hezbollah rocket fire across the border. And the next one here is about the potential escalation here. A report says that Israel sets March 15th as a deadline for a broad war in Lebanon. So this is another one from Jason Ditz. And it says, while tensions are high on the Lebanon-Israel border right now, there are reports that recent visits by a U.S. envoy made some progress with a roadmap based on U.N. Security Council Resolution 1701, which ended the 2006 Israel-Lebanon war. Nevertheless, Israel has reportedly ratcheted down hopes for a truce by the March 15th deadline. So apparently Israel, according to a report in Lebanese media, Israel has set March 15th as a deadline. If there's no deal, they're going to launch a broad war against Lebanon. Fighting along the border has been raging for months with tens of thousands of residents displaced on both sides amid near daily fire. At one point, Israel announced that returning residents to their homes was the primary incentive for the strikes. But more recently, Israel shifted to the long-term goal of removing Hezbollah from the border region. While both U.S. and French proposals for peace would do this, they also appear to be non-starters as long as a Gaza ceasefire is not in place. So a large coalition of aid agencies has urged a cessation of hostilities on humanitarian grounds. They noted that 42 civilians have been killed since Israeli strikes began in Lebanon, including seven children, and about 91,000 have been displaced. So it's a pretty bad situation for the people of southern Lebanon. And I went over a report, I think was that last week or this week, I can't remember, saying that the U.S. officials are expecting Israel to launch an invasion of Lebanon by late spring or early summer if there's no diplomatic deal. And this obviously is much sooner than that. Maybe not clear if this means an invasion or if it just means intensifying the strikes. I know Israel can't really... The idea of them opening up a full-blown war with Hezbollah and continuing operations in Gaza, it's not something that they can really do. So, again, I think they're banking on this dragging. I was going to say dragging in the U.S., but the U.S. is giving them every incentive to do this, you know. So I think they're trying to get the U.S. to intervene. All right, so the next one here, U.S. blames intelligence gaps for failure against Yemen's Houthis. So U.S. officials speaking to Financial Times said intelligence gaps are to blame for the failure to stop Houthi attacks on shipping in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden that started in response to the U.S.-backed Israeli massacre of Palestinians in Gaza. While the Pentagon has said that it hit hundreds of targets since the new bombing campaign started on January 12th, U.S. officials say they cannot assess how much damage has been done to the Yemeni group's capability. So this Financial Times report said that the extent of the damage is unclear because the U.S. lacked a detailed assessment of the group's capabilities before launching its bombing campaign. The New York Times reported something similar a few days after the U.S. bombing campaign started that said the U.S. had difficulty finding targets because it hadn't been collecting intelligence on the Houthis that much in recent years. So the Houthis, who are officially known as Ansar Allah, have also shown a resilience to bombing campaigns. The U.S. backed a brutal Saudi-UAE war against them from 2015 to 2022, which isn't completely over, but the ceasefire since 2022 has held very well. But that involved very heavy airstrikes and a blockade, and the Houthis only became more of a capable fighting force during that time. That war killed at least 377,000 people, and I know that number is considered a low estimate to people in Yemen who have a better idea, a better sense of how many people died. More than half of those casualties, more than half of those deaths were due to starvation and disease caused by the siege. And a ceasefire between the Houthis and Saudis has held since April 2022, but new U.S. sanctions are now blocking the implementation of a lasting peace deal. So that's all in jeopardy. It's just such a mess. And this has just escalated the situation, this new bombing campaign. The Houthis have been very clear that this is about Gaza and that they say the only way they'll stop is if there's a ceasefire. You know, the Israeli siege on Gaza ends, and U.S. officials have acknowledged that they believe the Houthis would actually live up to their word on that, but they're not going to pressure Israel to end it. All right, so the next one here, Zelensky names Zelensky as the ambassador to the U.K. So this is interesting. The Ukrainian president is going to appoint General Valery Zelensky, Ukraine's former commander-in-chief, as the ambassador to the UK. So Zelensky removed Zelensky from his post as a top general on February 8th, and the two have been at odds over the disastrous war with Russia for years. Zelensky has long been rumored to be a potential candidate once Ukraine has presidential elections again, and Zelensky's move to send him to the UK is seen as an effort to keep him from domestic politics. So Ukraine's foreign ministry announced this on Thursday, and then Zelensky said that Zelensky told him that he wants to go the diplomacy route after being the commander in chief. So he's saying, they've been acting cordial publicly since Zelensky removed him. It wasn't clear exactly how Zelensky was going to respond, but this news actually came after there was a poll in Ukraine released that found Zelensky would lose to Zelensky in a presidential election, lose pretty badly. The poll found that 41% would vote for Zelensky in a first round election, while only 23.7% would vote for Zelensky. So he's a real political threat. And Ukraine was due to hold presidential elections on March 31st of this month, but they have been delayed as Zelensky continues to extend martial law. Under Ukraine's constitution, a vote cannot be held in Ukraine under martial law, but Zelensky previously said it was possible if Western countries paid him enough money, but he's since dropped that idea. So while the Biden administration, all the Russia hawks in the U.S. are selling this proxy war as a fight for democracy, the U.S. has not pushed Zelensky to hold elections, and parliamentary elections that were scheduled for last fall have also been delayed. All right, so the next one here, the U.K. to send Ukraine 10,000 drones. So this one is from Kyle at the Libertarian Institute. It says the UK announced that it will transfer 10,000 UAVs to Ukraine, including 1,000 one-way attack drones. London's move comes as Ukrainian forces continue to lose territory to advancing Russians. And one thing about the UK, they've been very involved with helping Ukraine plan the war, attacks on Russia, things like that. We know there's British soldiers in Ukraine helping fire the Storm Shadow missiles. So Zelensky probably actually has a lot of experience with the British. So that could be part of the thinking as well. So British Defense Secretary Grant Shapps announced the transfer following a meeting with Zelensky, saying, quote, "I am ramping up our commitment to arm Ukraine with cutting-edge new drones coming directly from the UK's world-leading defense industries, straight from the factory floor to the front line," end quote. So more of this military aid from the UK. And I know the UK, there's been all these reports in British media saying that they've like totally depleted their military stockpiles for Ukraine. And here they just continue to send them stuff. Although these drones are pretty cheap and easy to make, these small drones. Excuse me. All right. So the next one here, Sweden officially joins NATO, ending centuries of neutrality. So Sweden officially joined NATO on Thursday, becoming the 32nd member of the Cold War era alliance, which had 16 members when the Soviet Union dissolved. By joining NATO, Sweden has officially abandoned its centuries-old policy of neutrality that kept the country out of two world wars, sparing it the destruction that most European nations faced. Sweden's Prime Minister Ulf Kristersson and Secretary of State Antony Blinken made Stockholm's membership official in Washington. Christensen was also due to visit the White House, and he attended Biden's State of the Union as a guest of honor. So Blinken said, quote, "This is a historic moment for Sweden. It's historic for the alliance. It's historic for the transatlantic relationship. Our NATO alliance is now stronger, larger than it has ever been," end quote. So the U.S. and Sweden, they've already signed a new military agreement that gives the U.S. access to multiple bases in Sweden. The U.S. signed a similar deal with Finland, which became NATO's 31st member last year. And Finland shares an over 800-mile border with Russia. And of course, Russia is beefing up its military in Western Russia in response to this. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu said on Wednesday, quote, "Against the background of a buildup of NATO's military potential near the Russian borders, the expansion of the alliance through the accession of Finland and in the future Sweden, we have taken steps to strengthen the groupings of troops in the northwestern and western strategic directions," end quote. At the end of the Cold War, the U.S. and its allies told the Russians that NATO would not be expanded east of Germany. And the article that I cite there, so this came out right before, this is article I wrote on this, is February 21st, 2022, just a few days before Russia invaded. And it's a document from the British National Archives. And it's what it is it's the minutes of a meeting between foreign ministry officials from the U.S., France, Germany, and Britain in Germany on March 6, 1999. And they were discussing the 2+4 negotiations that were held with the Soviet Union in 1990 to reunify East and West Germany. And a German diplomat said that they made it clear in these negotiations that NATO would not expand beyond the Elbe and that they could therefore not offer NATO membership to Poland and the other countries to the east. So this was not put in any treaty, and the U.S. and its NATO allies broke this promise made in these conversations and expanded the and made an enemy out of post-Soviet Russia when they didn't have to. And of course, all of this was a huge factor in Putin's decision to invade, the NATO promise for Ukraine and all that. So NATO continues to swell and swell and swell. All right. So the next one here, U.S. lawmakers to demand China divest from TikTok. So this article is from Will Porter at the Libertarian Institute, and it says a bipartisan group in Congress has introduced legislation that would give TikTok's China-based parent firm just 6 months to divest from the social media giant, a measure which already received backing from the White House. So this was introduced by Mike Gallagher, who chairs the House's Committee on China, which has been around for a little over a year now. He's like the total China hawk. He was just in Taiwan recently. And the panel's ranking Democrats, so it's bipartisan legislation. And again, it has backing from the White House. So it's this idea that TikTok is a big national security threat, which is just completely absurd at this point. They've made TikTok basically bend the knee to the U.S. government, and it censors things that most social media in the U.S. censors. And so this is basically would force, if they don't divest, if ByteDance, the Chinese company, doesn't divest from TikTok, then they would be banned from the app stores and everything. And this is just part of, you know, this overreach that we'll see from the government with this new Cold War with China. You know, this is just a taste, I think, of things to come. And this is the latest effort. Trump was trying to do this. He was trying to get like Microsoft to buy TikTok. They failed. They haven't been able to do this yet, but it's something that they really want to do. And I think Glenn Greenwald had a really good video about TikTok last year on his Rumble channel. I could put the link to that in the description if I remember. Basically saying, again, how the censorship regime, they've appointed this board, and it's like former FBI and U.S. intelligence people. So the censorship that you see on TikTok, again, is very similar to what you see on Facebook and stuff now. It's not, any different, really. But this is all just kind of fear-mongering with this so-called China's the big enemy now. And Biden said during his State of the Union, he repeated this crazy line that he said, I think in his first one, that the U.S. and China are in a competition to win the 21st century, whatever that means. And he said it again this time. So I left up the good news that the Texas Republicans voted in favor of the Defend the Guard Act. This is really great. I mean, I covered this yesterday, but this was a proposition on the Republican primary ballot. And it was over 2 million people that voted, and 84% said that they supported the Texas National Guard being restricted, not being able to be deployed to combat zones without a declaration of war. So it's just very good to see that. And it's good to have some good news on the page. And another thing about the State of the Union, Julian Assange's brother was there as a guest of Thomas Massey, which was very cool for him to do. But that is it for the news for today. Please go check out our viewpoints. One from Reza Benam, Business as Usual, the U.S. and Israel in the Middle East. One from Edward Lazansky, Mother of Maidan to Resign. One from Ramzi Baroud on Solidarity and Kushner's Shame, How Gaza Defeated U.S. Stratagem Again. One from Azadez Shahani and Sophia Montez, Complicity in Genocide, The Case Against the White House. And one from Connor Freeman at the Libertarian Institute, Biden's Unpopular Wars Reap Mass Death, a very scathing critique of all these disasters that Biden has gotten involved in. So please go check all that out. I will not be working on Sunday. I'm going to go to the Pierre Spray Award event, which is very cool. Max Blumenthal is the top prize winner. So I'll meet him. Gareth Porter will be there. I think the board is a very is a group of very prominent people. Andrew Coburn, Winslow Wheeler, you know, very prominent, you know, defense analysts. So that'll be really cool. But that means no show on Monday. So there's that. I have a big weekend coming up on Saturday. I'm getting my kids baptized finally. So it'll be a good weekend. So that's it for me. You could support us by liking, subscribing, sharing the show. Follow us on Instagram. I want to thank Addy. Addy Peck is a listener, viewer of this show who's been helping with the Instagram, and it looks really great. She's doing a lot of work. Her and her husband, Nash, watch this show together, which is really cool. So I really appreciate that help. And I'm telling you, go check out the Instagram because it looks awesome. I don't know how she does it. I tried and failed to get the Instagram going a few times, but it's looking really good. So definitely go check that out. but that's it for me. So I'm going to have a long weekend. I'll be back with a show recording Monday night to release early Tuesday morning. So anyway, I'll talk to you then. Thanks for listening.